making, making payments and saving, so more fees are taken. Every day the gatekeepers are trying to stop change. We cannot wait. Welcome to the blockchain.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the Henry Rain Show here on WWPR 1490 AM, the second half of Monday's Financial Power Block. Immediately following Talking Markets with Mark and Andrew, coming up at 5:05, it is the Henry Rain Show. It's your weekly roundup of Bitcoin, cryptocurrency, blockchain news, and more. And, of course, like I said, it's right after Talking Markets, and we don't unchain them until this happens. Got to play the theme music to wake him up. He falls asleep on that news break there. And of course, Andy, a.k.a. Andrew, of Talking Markets with Mark and Andrew.
Good afternoon,
Andy. Yes. Well, it's good to have you here, and I promise to unlock the leg chains just in about 45 minutes or so. I hope I remembered the key. So we also have with us, remotely, of course, he's our crypto tax man. He is Josh Sands. You can find out more about his services and his work at CryptoTaxMan.us. Josh, thanks for joining us again.
Thanks, guys.
Yes. Well, if you've heard him before on the show, then you probably are ready for what he's going to be telling us about, although there's some new aspects to it that we're going to get into. But as the Crypto Tax Man, and by the way, as I already mentioned, the website CryptoTaxMan.us, but he is across social media, Facebook.com/CryptoTaxMan, and on Twitter and Instagram, it's Crypto_Tax_Man, just to make sure you're listening. And you can find him in all those venues and find out how to contact him. But he's been trying to educate our audience for 4 or 5 months now, coming on once a month to explain what the IRS is expecting at the end of the 2019 tax year. And he'll be back on the other side of the tax year. But this is your last chance to listen to him with the thought process of preparation as opposed to reaction after this comes and you realize just what a jam you put yourself in by not preparing with Crypto Tax Man, as I have. And what about you, Andy?
You know, I have to get with Josh.
Yes.
I have to get with Josh and get all my stuff sorted out before April. Actually, usually not till October or September. September's corporate, right? I think September's corporate.
Yeah.
October's, yeah. So, yeah, I have to get with him.
October is when you file your extension.
Yes, I always file an extension.
Oh, well, then why even prepare?
Yeah.
You could get him in the slow season in July.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what I would prefer, slow season.
Yes.
Well, I wanted to be prepared because I didn't know what to expect. I had an idea what to expect. I mean, I could see the cash balances in the account, but I didn't really know how it got there or how convoluted or involved it was. And boy, when I downloaded Josh's software and he was on the phone with me and he was working me through it, and I was surprised at how active and not only did it track all this stuff, and I don't know how many other people used Margin out there, and that 20 cents every 4 hours that Kraken bills you for, that's a lot of transactions.
That can add up.
But I didn't have to think about any of that stuff. It also computed it for me, got me a lower cost basis. And then not only, and that's what I really want to talk to him about first of all today, is about people that want to, one of the things you can't put off, Andy or Andrew, either one of you, that if
depends
you want to
which
make
one you're
some
talking to.
Donations before the end of the tax year, I mean, it has to be done by the December 31st,
but
right?
What crypto donations?
Yeah.
Crypto donations for tax purposes to charity.
Oh, okay.
Which, by the way, Suncoast Community Church, which I attend, among other churches too, but that's the one I go.
You need some help, huh?
Yeah. Well, I find that different churches reach me in different ways. I was going to say touch me in different ways, but that can be a bad thing to say about a church. And Suncoast Community Church in Sarasota, I actually met the pastor there back in 2017, and we, not in the church, but outside of the church, and we struck up a conversation about Bitcoin and his knowledge of that, and they now...
That's
at the end of this last, in all, most cryptocurrencies.
Yeah. Well, you know, Father Sal, you know.
That's pretty
Pastor,
awesome.
Yeah. Have to get Father Sal and Pastor Jeff on that.
And, right. So, let me roll that back just a little bit. I got ahead of myself. So, anyway, not only did it figure out the cost basis for me, but because of the IRS ability to allow you to designate which crypto you are donating or spending or transacting with.
Mm-hmm.
Let Josh explain. I'm talking, he's there, he's the expert. Without going into too much detail about my personal situation, sort of explain the process that we went through as far as determining the best result using your software.
It uses specific identification that the software does. It's tokentax.co. That's the software. Anybody can use it, but I use it just because of that, the ability to use specific identification and their algorithm that they have. But what it's typically going to do is choose those highest cost bases for you, so it's going to generate the lowest capital gain or loss.
Now, do you do stocks, too?
I mean, I could. I do that with my wealth management clients at the end of the year. It's much easier.
Yeah, I'm wondering if I shouldn't do that.
But the stocks, you have to use the same system, right? Either first in, first out, or last in, last out.
You can use it. It depends on your broker that you're trading through. But there's some that you can. I mean, you have to choose your method.
You can't fandangle it at the end of the year.
You can change it throughout the year, but you just have to make sure that you're, like...
Your broker knows.
If you don't choose one, they're going to stick you with FIFO as a default. So you'll have to go back in, let's say you're using TD Ameritrade, go into your account, and make sure you trade that, or sorry, change that cost basis method. So typically you're going to choose, like...
Wait a minute. What if I didn't change it all year? Let's just say I had it in first in, first out, just for... example here, and at the end of the year, I decide, you know what? I just want
talking stocks or crypto.
Stocks. Okay. Because I don't think you'd choose that in crypto, do you?
Well, you do get to choose at the end of the year.
Yeah, at the end of the year. But is stocks, like you said, you choose your broker first in, first out, or last in, first out, whatever it is. Can at the end of the year, can I determine and say, listen, I just want to see what's the best for me?
As long as you're doing it before the end of the tax year.
And that's December.
Now, the only one you can't choose is specific ID because they only give you, most brokers only give you three business days after the trade to be able to choose your cost basis.
Do that.
But to minimize your tax, you could just choose highest price first out.
Okay.
All right. So it was over a month ago now that's the most prepared I've ever been. Plus, I didn't work for an employer this year, so that makes it a lot simpler too. But anyway, and I believe Josh, if I recall correctly, we did a calculation with first in, first out. We did a calculation last in, last out, and then the designated. We had three numbers that we looked at, didn't we?
Yeah.
Yeah, and then of course the designated in this case was the best choice. So that had me thinking, and. This church, the Suncoast Community, I'll keep plugging them, it's a church, what the heck.
Yeah.
It's Suncoast Community that, by the way, I did this, when he first told me he was going to do this, which was like about 4 months ago or 5 months ago, and I did a Google search. There's hardly any churches. I thought there'd be at least, several that a Google search would pull up, but I think I found two that came up on a Google search, and when I went to their websites, it really wasn't something that was obvious. But this so anyway, it went online in the last week or so. So it should have really gone on a little bit earlier so people could have thought about this. But what I was thinking, you tell me if I'm right here. Let's try and keep it simple, though. Let's say I have a Bitcoin that I bought in 2012 for $1. And I got a Bitcoin that I bought a few months ago for $9,500, and Bitcoin is $6,800 now.
Mm-hmm.
So could I designate, and now I've got, I want to get into cash with my Bitcoin. I'm antsy about the market. I know it's touch and go, and I want to get into cash and keep my taxes at a minimum. Now, this may not be the best overall strategy, but just to keep the numbers simple, I'm keeping it this way. So if I designated that I was giving the first Bitcoin to the church,
mm-hmm.
I would get a $6,800 deduction for a charitable gift, correct?
Wait, so if you gave the first one?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. So now the second Bitcoin, I bought it at $9,500, but it's only $6,800. So I'm down $2,700 or so. I can go to cash in that on through Coinbase Pro or wherever,
mm-hmm.
and
take a loss,
and not have to pay any capital gains on the second Bitcoin. Now, mm-hmm. Depending on my tax bracket, I might be able to actually come out ahead for my own selfish needs. If I was in a 40% tax bracket or something like that. I think that's the math is pretty close on that.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, if I wanted to help a charity out and maximize my tax benefits, that would be a way to do it. Am I too off base on that?
I like that.
No, yeah, giving away the one that you're going to owe tax on is definitely the way to go, and keeping the one that's at a loss.
So instead of giving the church, because we donate.
Right, yeah,
a lot.
Tithing
all the time. Even like St. Jude's and stuff, I like a lot of charities out there. Instead of giving them cash out of the, corporate account or whatever, I could actually donate them Bitcoin and write that off.
Yeah.
It'd be the same thing.
If you got enough income that you can use.
And then I could buy it back.
And then you remove that cost basis.
Yeah.
From like your pool of cost.
Wow. I'm liking that.
Yeah,
I have to talk
well,
to
that's
Pastor
why
Jeff.
People listen to this show. That's why the vast audience,
yeah.
when I tweet out that Josh Sands is on the show,
yeah.
is tuning in. And not to mention the post facto downloads.
Yeah, I tell you, it's actually interesting there. I mean, that would help a lot of people that own small businesses in that.
Well, I've got a friend, we won't say him on the air right now, but he was receiving sponsorship in 2012 or 13. $1,000 a month sponsorship when Bitcoin was $1 a Bitcoin, and he was receiving it in Bitcoin.
Oh, wow.
So he's got, significant question marks if he ever wants to realize those capital gains.
Yeah.
I wonder if there's a way to do that. And then, of course, he was receiving Bitcoin at higher prices through his business all the way through. All right, we'll have to get him in touch with Josh. And if you do want to get in touch with Josh... CryptoTaxMan.us. Do you want me to give the phone number out, too?
Sure.
219-201-0541. 219-201-0541. We'll do that a couple more times in this show.
And when do you have to donate? When's the last day you can donate? You said December 28th?
By
31st.
The end of the...
Okay. All right.
Well, there's... For filing a gift tax return, you're still going to have, it's going to be on your tax deadline, but yes, the donation needs to be made by the end of the year.
Okay.
So we're giving you 2 weeks. 2 weeks and a day right now, if you're listening live. No excuse for not helping out somebody with all that fat Bitcoin you've been sitting on all these years.
Mm-hmm.
Do some good with it rather than just playing in the BitMEX futures market.
Yeah. And yeah, that's with 30-day rule before the wash trading, right?
Before, so it's, I guess, 30, but it's really 60 days because it's before and after that purchase date.
Well, is that true with a commodity like Bitcoin?
So you can't, like, purchase. Because I actually had a client that came to me for that. Like, well, can I just buy what I'm going to sell again? And it's actually a 60-day window.
60-day window, so.
Yeah.
So that counts on donations also?
No, I was saying it.
Donations, no. That's,
if you bought it at 9,000, why not?
I'm saying selfish thoughts.
I bought it at 9,000. I could sell here and go.
The block sale rule still doesn't apply to crypto yet, so it's kind of up to you if you want to follow that rule or not. They haven't come out and said that applies to crypto yet.
So do you have any of your clients that have donated in crypto?
No, I haven't. Okay. Not yet.
All right.
Well, you got one now.
Well, now you got a use case for them. let's keep Josh around, but get him in on a couple other things that I think will actually he'll have some input on here. I think it will relate to his business. He may not think about it when I first mention it.
I tell you, I've got news for you.
Woo. A dog on there now.
Well, your dog likes Greg Allman, but maybe I can get some Howling Wolf blues on there for him next time around. So Bitcoin rose above 7,100 on December 16th. Well, that was ancient history. Just hit a fresh gap in the futures market, continuing a trend that has captured analysts. Bitcoin data from Coin. Oh, this is syntax in this article is terrible. Anyway, it's spiked to 7,145 earlier today, and spent much of the previous 12 hours below the 7,100 mark. Well, I believe it's still back down there. Where around 6,800 now?
6,885.
The Talking Market Show broke Bitcoin when they came on the air.
We did.
Or at least when their show prep broke it.
Yeah.
Really? Well done. The uptick allowed Bitcoin to reach the lower echelons of a gap left by CME's Bitcoin futures when they closed on Friday. So, Andy, two things. What are you seeing with the chart and the price of Bitcoin? And are you still buying into, or did you ever buy into this whole, you got to fill the futures gap?
No, I don't believe in the futures gap. I think that's just not applicable to this market.
Yes, people looking for things.
Looking for something to talk about.
Yes, and apply it to situations. And if it doesn't work, we'll find something else to apply.
That's right. Yeah.
So what are we doing with Bitcoin?
It looks pretty crappy right now, but again, it's really not. I want to see what tomorrow does before I make a decision here. It looks, you know, the push lower is, you know, it's down 150 points. It's not the end of the world here. You know, there was a short trigger there, but it's not really falling apart here, and I would think it would be falling apart. That 7,000 level was kind of key level there for me anyways, and it's just not falling apart. I thought we'd be at 6,500 by now, and we're not. We're still hanging in there. So,
and it's been hours.
It's been hours. So, you know, when it moves fast. It doesn't mess around. It doesn't go, oh, yeah, I'm just going to mess around and slowly grow. You know, it usually falls apart pretty quick. And we're not seeing that. So I'm
it's
just
like last
reserve
call
judgment
at the bar.
Here.
It makes it
yeah,
move
it
right
Yeah, it makes
then.
It moves. That's right.
Yeah. Okay. Well, so another reason why you might want to do your donations now when you get your maximum tax deduction.
Mm-hmm.
And also you might want to call Josh, the crypto tax man, and he can't give well, I shouldn't put words in his mouth, but I'm going to suggest that don't necessarily call him to know what you want to buy or sell your Bitcoin, but tell him what you want to do, and then he can help you figure out
Absolutely.
The most advantageous way to do that. Was that a fair statement, Josh?
Yeah, it's pretty fair.
Okay. all right. I'm not a financial advisor marketer, but I pretend to play one on the radio.
You did sleep at a Holiday Inn at some point, right?
Well, this is where we're going to turn this one back on, Josh, in a second. A report published back on December 4th by Grayscale, that's the Bitcoin ETF operator, suggests that 43% of investors interested in Bitcoin are women. The study involved 1,100 U.S. investors between the ages of 25 and 64. They were surveyed between March and April of this year. They were all involved in personal investing and held at least $10,000 in investable assets with at least $50,000 in household income. Sorry, I didn't get that client that list for you, Josh. But anyway, as the report points out, cryptocurrencies are believed to be predominantly male space. Google Analytics suggests that 90% of the engagement is from males. But the data survey challenges that. Bitcoin conversations tend to focus on predominantly male investor audience, and yet data indicates women have a healthy interest in Bitcoin as well. You know, it almost... Not to be horribly sexist or something like that. That almost sounds like, you know, you could just substitute sex for Bitcoin in, and yeah. There would be a survey that said the same thing. Oh, men are really interested. Women are interested, but they just don't talk about it. Anyway, so women are
really talk about it. You never owned a
women
restaurant.
Are really interested in that don't talk about in front of you.
You never owned a restaurant, Henry. Let me tell you, they talk about it.
Customers or your workers?
Both. Once you get to know the customers, oh, yeah. There are times you just got to say, you know what, I've heard enough.
And they ask you what you're going to do.
Yeah. Imagine being a hairdresser. They get all the goop.
Imagine being a gay hairdresser. You probably really care
about
that.
Yeah.
Not to be whatever prejudicial thing I was being at that moment in time. Everything you say is...
I mean, you can't be careful anymore. You're calling you up. Taking you off
well, I'm just going to blame it on my upbringing.
There are no genders. No genders.
Yeah. All right. We're digging a hole that Josh isn't even going to want to come on the line after I say that. Anyway, 56.2% of the women, 56.4% of the men see significant growth opportunity. I could be running through these numbers. And
there's a lot of women interested in Bitcoin. That's what it comes down to.
And I think what you really get to when it comes into this at the bottom line is that the 44% of women versus 22% of men say they don't feel confident in investing. So now I think we're getting to a real gender gap here. Mm-hmm. So if you're not confident, that's probably why you aren't verbalizing your interest in the Bitcoin or you're taking positions in. So kicking it back to Josh, and so I don't dig a hole any bigger for myself, how prevalent has your client base been with the female gender?
Yeah, I read this earlier, and I've always kind of had the same view that it was more, I've seen more males trading crypto. I don't know if there's any data to back that up in regards to what we're talking about here, but I've only had one female client, and then there's only one other female that I know that trades it, that actually I just met out on the town. Actually, it was at the beach. I was wearing a Bitcoin shirt, and that's the only other female that I've talked to that trades crypto.
Well, you know, on the other hand, though, here in the studio, from our the highs of the euphoria of 2017 to right now, when you think of the participation in the show, almost half of the in-studio participants that traded Bitcoin were women. Sabine, Colleen, Cara.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you go up to Block Spaces in Tampa, I'm not saying it's a 50-50 breakdown, but there are I haven't been up there in a long time.
Well,
now,
it could be saying this, too, and is that women keep better records than men.
Or, when they find out they have to be honest about everything on this year's tax return...
Or women are less honest. I mean, it's one of the two.
we will see just how many women are involved in this, and Josh may have a whole different demographic when he comes around after the first of the year.
Possible.
Anything you want to add to that topic, Josh?
No, maybe I do need to venture out a little more.
That's not happening. Okay. Well, this is a good time to take a break before we shift gears and get into some of the other stories here. Josh, do you want to hang around and talk about the other news, or what's your schedule call for?
Sure. I can hang around.
All right. We're going to go to a break, and on the other side, we'll be back with Josh Sands, Crypto Tax Man, CryptoTaxMan.us, Andy, and more Bitcoin news. Trying to get into Bitcoin but don't know where to start? Byte Federal ATMs make it easy. Safe, secure, and reliable, a Byte Federal ATM introduces you to cryptocurrency investing with a method you're familiar with at a real physical location. If you've ever used a bank ATM, then you're ready to step up to a Byte Federal ATM and start building your digital assets. Located throughout Florida and Georgia, there's a Byte Federal ATM near you. Go to ByteFederal.com to find a location for you. That's ByteFederal.com, and you'll find a real phone number, a real email, and real people you've heard live on the Henry Rain Show.
It's on the way out. It's on the way out. It's on the way out.
Henry Rain Show here on WWPR, 1490 AM. It's the Henry Rain Show with your weekly roundup of Bitcoin, blockchain news, and more. Starting to get into a little more disruptive technology and covering some other unique aspects. We may get to some 3D printing stories here before the end of the hour. We have Josh Sands with us. He is the Crypto Tax Man, and you can find out why at CryptoTaxMan.us. Or if you're more social or social media inclined, you can find him on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram. On Facebook, it's just Facebook.com/CryptoTaxMan. But on Twitter and Instagram, you're going to have to use your underscore key, and it's crypto_tax_man. Or if you're old-fashioned and like talking to people, you could try a phone call to 219-201-0541. That's 219-201-0541. And there'll be links on the podcast sites, too, to his website. And, of course, we have Andy, a.k.a. Andrew, of Talking Markets with Mark and Andrew. And I think...
Hey, Bitcoin's up $5 this rally.
It is. Wow. Okay. Let's see if we can get into a couple of these things that might help it rally. Let's see if we can fix what got broken earlier today. Binance, the leading global cryptocurrency exchange by trading volume and users, today announced the launch of its fiat gateway for Latin America. The new platform, named Latamex, which will operate under the Binance Fiat Gateway and will allow Binance's Latin American users to purchase cryptocurrency directly in association with Settle Network, a Latin American digital asset liquidation network. Never heard of it, but I'm sure it must work great. The platform will initially be launched in Argentina and Brazil, following the direct purchase of cryptocurrencies being using Argentine pesos or Brazilian reals. The users will be able to buy Bitcoin, Binance Coin, Ether, Binance Stablecoin, and Brazilian users will be able to use the platform. Latamex's official website indicates that service will eventually be available to 13 other countries: Mexico, Uruguay, Colombia, Panama, Costa Rica, Dominican Republic, Guatemala, Honduras, Nicaragua, El Salvador, Paraguay, Peru, and Chile. Not. You might be able to buy your chili with cryptocurrency, but you'll be able to trade it in Chile. So, absentee on the list is Venezuela. They didn't want any of that messing up their launch. So, I'm sure the Venezuelans will just figure out how to go through one of the other countries. They seem to be able to get to the other countries quite often now. So, anyway, Josh, in the previous show, one of the points I was making is I have been disengaged from the crypto market, although I pretty much was out at 9,500. I did try, and I got whipsawed on that one up and down. Lost a couple hundred dollars there since I talked to Josh the last time. But other than that, I just basically had hands off. Because I don't think that we're going to see any consolidation and strong rally until we get more users. And we won't have more users until we see more sideways trading and more use cases and more real-world need. And I think this is one of those things because... you know, in Latin America, you may not want to hold Brazilian reals or Argentine pesos, even if you live in those countries. If you got something, as much as Bitcoin's depreciated, Some of these currencies are in the race to the bottom. Yeah. They're winning. So,
yeah.
Josh, what are your thoughts?
I mean, I agree. It's like if you have a currency that's, you know, unbelievably volatile and you're looking for something that's a little more, I guess, trustworthy, you might, it's a good reason to move into crypto if you live in one of those countries.
Right. What about the thought, though, that we just need more users? We're not going to get any more appreciation in the foreseeable future. Do you have an opinion on that?
Well, yeah, that's definitely a factor. Because, I mean, there's going to be a point where this isn't just an investment for people. There's got to be an end use for it. But then also from the tax perspective, is if the IRS isn't going to solve the issue with...
de minimis purchases?
De minimis purchases, and then also, if not having to report every USDC transaction is, you know, that's a pain in the butt itself for people. And especially with, if Libra's going to get passed, you know, if they're going to get through, and you have to report all those transactions, that's not going to be attractive for people.
Well, now I've got a question for you, Josh. Do you think some of the people out there that, you know, bought at higher levels, say 9,000, 10,000, and that rally up, and then, of course, bought the consolidation at higher levels, do you think some of them could be selling here to just to get the tax part, just to get the tax credit?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's partially what I'm working on from now to the end of the year.
Yeah, but you can only use up to $3,000 unless you got other capital losses or gains to.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you got other capital gains, I mean, like say stocks or something like that, or even just income, right?
Yeah, and I mean, nobody knows what's going to happen in the future. So even if you're taking some of those capital losses and carrying them over, I mean, you'll be able to use them against your capital gains, maybe against real estate or stocks. So
yeah,
you guys with your diverse portfolios.
Hey, there's only one thing that's not tracked, and you can trade it, and you can buy and sell, and it's pretty much, unless you go over $10,000, it's not reported to the IRS, and that's gold and silver.
Really?
Yeah. You can go down to a coin dealer, buy a $1,200 gold coin.
It's
not reported.
It doesn't say that. And you're relieved of your responsibilities.
I didn't say that. I'm saying it's not reported.
Okay.
I mean, that's still the ultimate currency is gold. It's not tracked at all. Bitcoin is tracked. They can see exactly where that wallet, and when you go to pull it out and make it into cash, boom, you're done. It's tracked. They know who it was. With gold?
If you're holding physical gold, then...
Yeah. I mean, you remember that guy in Arizona that found that hoard of St. Gaudens. Found a hoard of St. Gaudens off of old Wells Fargo. Probably an old Wells Fargo, buggy. And he was bragging about it. And Wells Fargo came in and said, hey, that's ours. And they made him give it to him because it was stolen. It was stolen. See, the best thing for him to do was just to not say a damn thing and go to coin dealers and just sell them, $1,200, $1,400 a pop.
Well, see, we were talking about church earlier, and that's why they teach you humility at church.
Yeah, I got to give more to Pastor
Jeff.
You never
know when you're going to have a Wells Fargo windfall. And if you have to give it all back, you can't give any to the church.
I just wonder how much money's buried out there in the desert.
Somebody brought up Libra. The white paper for Facebook's proposed Libra currency has been quietly updated. Oh, I wonder what they could have done. Anyway, some Georgetown University law professor had nothing better to do but look for updates on the Libra website.
Yeah, there you go.
And what he found, Chris Brewer, by the way, was that the revised Libra Association members, as the members of the association, like the formerly, like Visa was on there, and PayPal
all of them.
Back when they were on there, it said that they would have dividends paid to them because they were members for, they kicked in their $10
million. Yeah.
And they would get dividends from the reserves that were being held to back the Libra. Well, that has all changed. First, the interest on the reserve assets would be used to cover costs, keep transaction fees low, support growth, and pay dividends to early investors. But that would mean that you had to treat this like they were investing in it.
Yeah.
So let's not give them any money. Instead, the members and their dividends have now been removed from the white paper. Interest on the reserve assets will be used to cover the cost of the system, ensure low transaction fees, support further growth and adoption, take some of the burden off Facebook. No, that wasn't on the paper. The problem with awarding dividends and the reason for the change, according to Brummer, is that it created a potential conflict of interest between Libra Association members and end users of the money. That would encourage the association members who were receiving dividends to want to receive dividends and then receive higher dividends, and therefore I might even put it in the reserves into higher risk assets, and that it even right just as the dog
even
is,
the dog's upset about it
here.
Yeah.
he's saying,
I want my money.
Don't forget that they want to classify Libra as a security, and if they start paying dividends, then you pretty much darn better call it a security.
Well, that's the issue there. Is, I mean, if we're going to be using it as some type of currency, it's not going to be it's going to be a pain doing your taxes.
Yeah.
What's your dog's name?
Azula.
With an A at the beginning, Azula?
Yeah.
Huh. Well, tell it when you get off the air. Tell Azula that, is it a he or a she?
She.
That she is the most listened to dog on radio. Can't say anything about the humans, but no. She's definitely the most listened to dog. We got the whole Libra thing going. We got a lot of stablecoin news that we'll just hit quickly because I do want to hit a couple of the 3D printing stories. Christine Lagarde, who many of you knew as the head of the IMF, the International Monetary Fund, she was fond of the fund, but it was stood for International Monetary Fund, is now president of the European Central Bank. So she's got a good job service working for her. Anyway, she said the institution should be ahead of the curve regarding the demand for stablecoins. She's a little bit in the minority on this stuff as far as Western financial powers, saying, my personal conviction on the issue of stablecoins is that we better be ahead of the curve. There is clearly demand out there we have to respond to. And unsaid is we got to do it before Facebook. So she was also making comments back when she was head of the Monetary Fund. She was aware of the risks and the benefits, and so she's a forward thinker on this. Well, what else is going on in that kind of pseudo-cryptocurrency investment world where old school people just want their Bitcoin to go up, and new school people are figuring, well, how can we just make money on this? Inventing anything we can to not lose the transaction fees.
You spooked my interest in the 3D printing.
For me?
You spooked my interest in the 3D printing.
Well, yeah. Well, you talked about it last week. About it last week. We're getting into, we're adding a disruptor segment. Not just you disrupting me or me disrupting talking markets. Or us disrupting Josh and Azula's dinner hour. We're going to get into disruptive technology, but I want to finish the stablecoin stuff. PayPal is suing the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau for requiring the firm to make misleading and confusing disclosures about its fees. That's right. They're saying the oversight agency is telling them to make misleading and confusing statements. The digital giant, payment giant, filed a lawsuit against the CFPB, arguing that the agency is ignored. Anyway, to get to the bottom of this, not to keep Andy waiting for the 3D printing, is they are lumping PayPal's digital wallet in with prepaid debit cards. And if you ever bought a prepaid debit card, you know, it just comes on a little piece of cardboard. And so the CFPB...
Cardboard?
Well, whatever.
You're showing your age. Plastic.
No, the card is plastic, but when the thing they hang on the pegboard at
7-Eleven? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So the cardboard has got some relevance?
Some of my cultural references may be a little out of date, but I do.
So what's the cardboard have for relevance?
Because when you got that little thing on it, so the regulation is you've got to put the highest fees you're going to charge rather than a whole long schedule that, you know, is going to stretch out like over a whole page
or a CVS receipt.
Yeah. So well, no, even bigger. But you know, if you looked at those debit cards, sometimes they like you got to activate it. It costs you money, and it's going. You get them for gifts,
yeah,
haven't you?
Yeah. No.
Yeah, and if you don't use them by so much, they're going to knock it down a dollar every month or every 4 or 5 months.
What?
Yeah. If you don't. Oh gosh.
Never heard that.
You bought prepaid debit cards for gifts or something, haven't you?
I mean, honestly, it's been a long time, so I can't remember.
Yeah.
And you probably didn't even look at the fees on the back. That's why.
No, absolutely not.
That's why Elizabeth Warren, when she was running that thing, made sure that they printed it real big with the biggest numbers so you knew how much those evil financial people were screwing you over. So, anyway, but with PayPal and their benign digital wallet, they're like, well, we shouldn't have to say the most expensive fees because hardly anybody gets them because we've got a very useful utility here and blah, 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 so we're going to sue you so we don't have to do this. Anyway.
So no cardboard for PayPal.
So I guess the bottom line on all this is stablecoins are coming to the European Central Bank. PayPal wants you to carry the digital wallet, and nobody wants you to use cash anymore. They want you to use stuff they can make money on. Okay.
Let's get into the cool stuff. What's the 3D printing?
By the way, Advanced Micro Devices has joined the Blockchain Game Alliance.
I saw that.
We'll look at that sometime when it becomes more relevant. Anthem is launching a blockchain. So you've got to get into the blockchain stuff. Blockchain for medical data. And actually, I think they're getting involved with some of the other major carriers, too. I thought I saw United Healthcare, and that's one of the ones. Oh, Aetna, PNC Bank, and IBM are all partnering on this. All right. Now, 3D printing. Last week we were talking about that. We were talking about resilient communities and how different things like that could happen. ARK Investment. They do a lot of mutual funds of disruptive technology. I've spoken about them before in one of their personal emails to me to keep me informed about things
like this.
I'm on their list. They pointed out that Wired magazine, which I guess is really just Wired website these days, wrote that the Air Force is doing 3D printing replacement parts at a cost of almost 30 times less than traditional manufacturing methods. 3D printing is suited for the aerospace application because it reduces the cost of the manufacturer, especially low-volume parts. You know, reduces not only the weight, lowering fuel costs, but also the number of parts and manufacturing steps, lowers labor costs, et cetera. And in 2013, GE, for example, designed a 3D-printed fuel nozzle for the LEAP jet engine that combined 20 parts into one, lowered its weight by 25%. And then in 2015, when the jet entered production, each of the engine requiring 19 nozzles, 2019, GE announced that the GE 9X engine included 300 3D printed parts. In other words, I guess the point they're making is that this is a growing industry.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, if you look at 3D, do you look at many 3D, the charts of 3D printing companies?
Yes.
Because they had a spike a couple years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And then they
I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so
it's gotten very competitive, and when you start to get into all that, GE's doing it. That's great. That was actually an interesting talk.
Extrapolating this trend, ARK estimates that 4,000 parts in a jet engine could be 3D printed in 5 years. Ultimately, 30% of 200,000 parts in a typical engine will be 3D printed. So 30% of 200,000 is a lot more than 4,000.
Mm-hmm.
And have a significant impact on the gross margin, 15 to 20% of companies like Boeing and Airbus, which you talk about all the time on your investment show, the trading show. So,
Boeing, boo.
Do you find with your client base that they have much awareness of 3D printing companies and have much interest in them? Josh?
You're talking to me. Okay.
Yeah.
Actually, no, I haven't had anybody ask me about, you know, any type of 3D company. A few years ago when they were kind of going gangbusters, I did have a couple of my other, like, traditional investment clients ask me about it.
But you wonder, because you spoke a lot about this on the last show, just how big a change is coming in the way we do things, coming from your mechanical engineering background.
Oh, it's huge.
You're so familiar with the old way of doing things.
I mean, if anybody's ever, you know, we had teacher was former head designer at General Motors for parts. And what we had to do to design a part, it was amazing, because you had to not only just design the part, you had to design the process to manufacture the part. So the castings, the CNCing and all that. And a lot of times it was very difficult because you had to get channels within for cooling and stuff within these dies and that you just, you know, how do you get them in there? And with 3D, takes it all out of the, you do anything. And it's a game changer, in my opinion. I think it's going to be huge. And it's, you know, of course, it's picking the right companies that are going to survive it.
And if you ever watch one of these videos in the reverse of slow motion and time-lapse photography, it's like they just rise up from the ground.
Yeah.
Well, it's not just for big companies like GE or GM. And very practical, that next story I found, this is really, I found the most interesting and, because you see homeless people all over the place, and some of the people that look like they're homeless may not really be homeless, but still, there's thousands. It was at the church I attend on Sunday, as opposed to the one I go down on Saturdays. I was listening to the service. There were 300 homeless children that are registered as homeless at the elementary school down the road from us. And then in Manatee High School, hundreds.
Yeah.
And you know, they were coming up with stuff for them for the Christmas holiday. Anyway, so finding a solution to that would be great. And you're thinking, well, finding affordable housing. Well, to talk about affordable housing in this story is pretty amazing. In a rainy rural site in the Mexican state of Tabasco, a pair of 3D-printed homes represent a milestone. They're the initial two structures in a community that aims to be the world's first 3D-printed housing development. Now, I'm going to jump to the end here and just say they're building two 3D houses, and then they're building another 48 low-cost houses, and they're going to see how the two 3D-printed hold up over the years compared to the other ones. And not 20 years, but, you know, 5 or 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
This month, a team of designers and philanthropists unveiled the houses, which are part of a planned 50-home neighborhood for low-income families. Result of a collaboration between New Story, a San Francisco-based housing nonprofit, and Icon, a construction technology company that designs 3D printers. So, if you were in San Francisco, and I hear a few people out in San Francisco have plenty of Bitcoin, they could be donating their Bitcoin and getting the tax deduction and doing something like this. At 500 square feet each, the home takes just 24 hours to print. A 500 square foot home in 24 hours.
That's the print. That's not the electrical. That's not the mechanical. That's not the doors. That's not the windows. Yeah, there's a lot more to it.
One.
But the shelves there in 24 hours. Yeah. That's pretty amazing.
You're out of the rain.
Yeah, you're out of the rain. Yeah.
And 500 square foot for people that haven't thought it through, that'd be like one size of one of our
studio apartment. Yeah,
I mean, it's like living in New York.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, the Icon's printer, known as the Vulcan 2, and there's a picture here which I won't try and describe over the radio, weighs about 3,800 pounds, can operate during a power shortage, and comes with LED lighting for printing at night. It's operated via controls through a tablet, so you're building houses with your iPad.
Wow.
So only a few workers are required to print a home. The process is relatively simple. The printer churns out layers of cement which amass to form the walls of the home. So as I said, from the bottom up, it's just like lays down layer.
I've seen that process. Pretty cool.
The company's cement mixture is stronger than traditional building materials. I assume they're talking about something stronger than the 10 houses they're doing now. Can withstand extreme weather conditions. Non-printed fixtures like doors and windows are installed at the end of the process. They worked with local charities and all to find the 500 families and narrowed it down to the 50 that would get the homes. The upfront cost of the building, the homes, and necessary infrastructure was funded by the New Story. The nonprofit declined to say how much the houses cost, but it estimated that to build a 600 to 800 square foot home would be $4,000 or less.
That's pretty cheap.
Yeah. A local nonprofit selected the wing. Families, residents will be required to pay a small mortgage of 400 pesos, about $20 per month for 7 years. So $240 a year for 7 years. And they're not going to cover the whole $4,000, but that covers pretty much. That's a good payment considering that the average income in Tabasco for a family is $77 a month. So $20 a month is fair. Zero interest mortgages. And the home, the 500-square-foot homes, have two bedrooms, living room, kitchen, and a bathroom. So it's got plumbing and all. I assume if it's got a bathroom, it's got plumbing.
Yeah.
And so
There's a Facebook page. I'm actually looking at it right now.
Yeah.
3D printed houses. These are actually pretty nice.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, especially when you compare it to the dirt floor tin hut that they're living in right now. I'm looking at a kitchen with a small refrigerator, a full height, but small, and a small range and oven. And The two 3D printed homes won't be occupied until the entire community is completed.
You're listening to AM 1490, WWPR,
cool.
Bradenton, Sarasota, Tampa Bay.
Well, call Josh before the end of the tax year, cryptotaxman.us. Find him on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And say hi to Asulu when you see him. And you can call him 219-201-0541, 219-201-0541. Josh, thanks a lot for spending the whole time with us.
Okay, thanks, guys. Have a good holiday.
You too, brother.
Bye.
Bye.
And, I'll see you before the holiday.
Yeah, I'll see you before the holiday.
So have a good Monday.
Yeah, you too.
Have
a good week.
We will...
We'll see you next week, I guess.
Yeah. None of the holidays fall on Monday, so I guess we'll be doing something. Hey. We'll figure it out by Monday. Listen to the Henry Rain Show.
You, with your masquerading and you, always contemplating what to do. In case happiness found you, can't you see that it's all around you?